The Napoleonic Era. The Return of Napoleon's Ashes. Napoleon is set free from the grave. Well, when we left off last time, everybody was getting ready for the big day. They were going to exhume Napoleon. Well, that is going to be quite a job. So this time, we're going to be looking at the opening of the tomb and trying to get the coffins out of the grave. Next time, we'll open the casket and see what nature has left behind. Now, on the eve of the day fixed for the exhumation, a detachment of the 91st Regiment, commanded by Lieutenant Barney, set out in the afternoon ahead of the hearse, the springs of which had been hastily strengthened so that it would not give way under the weight of the sarcophagus brought from France. Rohan Chabot's reports led one to think that there was some friction between the British and French authorities over the formalities of the exhumation. Quote, from the first day, the Prince de Joinville suggested to the governor and that his crews should undertake the work of exhumation and removal, which His Royal Highness would in that case supervise in person. But General Middlemore had received formal orders from his government to be responsible for himself for all the operations until the imperial coffin arrived at the place of embarkation, and therefore to decline the prince's offer. End of quote. Now, Middlemore was an old soldier and an awkward character, the first governor appointed by the government after the island was taken over by the East India Company. He had taken possession of his post with the brusqueness reminiscent of an occupying army, and his arbitrary methods antagonized even the inhabitants, who criticized his intransigent attitude towards the French. He's ultimately replaced in 1842 by Colonel Trelawney, who gained nothing but praise from the French expedition and was well received by the population. At any rate, after the dinner given by Joinville on board the frigate, all those who were to be present at the ceremony set off in their turn along the road to the valley. The French were represented by Rohan Chabot, Bertrand and his son, Emmanuel de Las Casas, Gourgaud, Marchand, the Abbe Conquereau, and two choir boys, Captain Guillet of La Favorite, Captain Dorette of Restis, Captain Charnay and Dr. Guillard from La Belle Poulet, Saint-Denis, Perrion, Archambault, Novarez, and a lead worker. Joinville remained on board, offended because his crews were not allowed to undertake the operation. Now, the English had chosen Captain Alexander to act as commissioner, and also present were Judge Wilde, Colonel Trelawney, Colonel Hodson, and William Seal, who was the secretary to the government, Captain Littlehale of the Dolphin, and Andrew Darling, who had arranged the funeral in 1821, as well as two foremen from the public service works and engineers. The icy wind was blowing and the rain was falling in torrents in the sinister devil's punch bowl. The British soldiers, whose job it was to keep inquisitive people at bay, had set up two tents close to the tombstone, one as a shelter, the other as a chapel. Shadowy figures came and went in an agonizing silence. Workmen armed with picks and shovels, and soldiers in red uniforms carrying lanterns, while the moon occasionally emerged from her canopy of clouds and threw unreal light on the conqueror's last bivouac, revealing soaked tunics and faces hollow-eyed from fatigue and emotion. This is going to be a major job, and you'll see that as they get to the different layers. First of all, the geraniums and bulbous plants growing around the tombstone were pulled up. Prince de Joinville had asked to have them to be distributed to his sailors. Then the workmen threw down the heavy metal grill, raised the three flagstones, and began to clear away the thick layer of clay filling the top part of the grave. Not until 3 o'clock in the morning, and at a depth of 2 meters, did the sappers' picks at last reach the layer of Roman cement. That was 25 centimeters deep, and it closed the vault and adhered firmly to the walls. Now the chisels and the hammers came into use. While Captain Alexander was despairing of finishing the work in time for the funeral procession to take place during the day, he decided, just in case, to have a trench dug on the left side of the grave so as to reach the coffin should the cement resist the workmen's efforts. The soldiers worked their hardest, and towards 8 o'clock in the morning, the last fragments of that Roman masonry finally gave way. Now it revealed a flagstone, which was set in that area and had to be raised. So a derrick was used to lift that out of the grave. Between the bed of cement and the stone coffin, there was a layer of mortar 27 centimeters thick, made of rubble and iron tenons. It was daylight by now, but the rain went on falling without respite, and the officers went into the tent, put on their uniforms. At 9:30, the mahogany coffin finally came into view, as well as the straps by which it had been lowered. The priest, Abbe Coquereau, began to chant the De Profundis. Then the two commissioners, Rohan Chabot and Alexander, went into the grave to examine the coffin, one corner of which seemed to have suffered from the damp. This quadruple coffin, and actually there's more than that because the exterior sarcophagus has multiple layers in it too, quadruple coffin rested on flagstones, which were themselves supported by more rubble. But there's a spring that flows only a few meters away, and it evidently produced constant humidity. As soon as the men had climbed out again, Dr. Guillard instructed that holes be pierced at both the head and the feet of the coffin, which would then allow them to lift it out of its stone niche and then laid to the left side of the grave. After that, it would be carried by 12 bareheaded soldiers into a tent where the Abbe Coquereau recited the commendatory prayers. So we've got him out of the ground. We've got the coffins out of the ground. And as you can see, the English were certainly prepared to make sure that the second coming didn't happen easily, that Roman masonry was just invincible. And the men worked a tremendous amount of time to dig down into that dirt. Remember, it's basically 12 feet deep, not 6. Of course, the next thing will be the opening of all the coffins. And although this is going to be a little short podcast, I think it's better to separate the two. Let's dig it out. See how that goes, and then we'll look at the process, the opening of the different layers of the coffins and what everybody saw and the references. And then I'll also add that reference from the gentleman and his group who just happened to be on the island when all this took place and was able to get a sneak peek through the back of the tent. Now, the sources for what we've been doing today is Napoleon's Last Journey by Martineau, Funerales de Emperor Napoleon by Lance, The Cult Napoleon by Lucas Burbiton, and The Second Funeral of Napoleon by Thackeray. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, and of course, you can always have those on USBs. You just have to ask me, and thank you very much.